The second casualty in the battle for the castle was Vargo, a lank young man who actually became a vampire because he thought he'd meet interesting girls, or any girls at all, and had been told he looked good in black. And then he'd found that a vampire's interests always centre sooner or later on the next meal, and hitherto he'd never really thought of the neck as the most interesting organ a girl could have. Right now, all he wanted to do was sleep. So as the vampire surged into the castle proper, he sauntered gently away in the direction of his cellar and nice comfortable coffin. Of course, he was hungry, since all he'd got in escrow was a foot in the chest. But he had just enough sense of self-preservation to let the others get on with the hunting so that he could turn up later for the feast. His coffin was in the centre of the dim cellar, its lid lying carelessly on the floor beside it. He'd always been messy with the bedclothes, even as a human. Vargo climbed in, twisted and turned a few times to get comfortable on the pillow, then pulled the lid down and latched it. As the eye of narrative drew back from the coffin on its stand, two things happened. One happened comparatively slowly, and this was Vargo's realization that he never recalled the coffin having a pillow before. The other was Grebo, deciding that he was as mad as hell and wasn't going to take it any more. He'd been shaken around in the wheelie thing and then sat on by Nanny, and he was angry about that because he knew in a dim animal way that scratching Nanny might be the single most stupid thing he could do in the whole world, since no one else was prepared to feed him. This hadn't helped his temper. Then he'd encountered a dog, which had tried to lick him. He'd scratched and bitten it a few times, but this had had no effect apart from encouraging it to try to be more friendly. He'd finally found a comfy resting place and had curled up into a ball, and now someone was using him as a cushion. There wasn't a great deal of noise. The coffin rocked a few times and then pivoted around. Grebo sheathed his claws and went back to sleep. "Burn with a clear, bright light. Splash, suck, splash, and I in mine, om be praised," squelch, splash. Oates had worked his way through most of the hymns he knew, even the old ones you shouldn't really sing anymore, but you nevertheless remembered because the words were so good. He sang them loudly and defiantly to hold back the night and the doubts. They helped take his mind off the weight of Granny Weatherwax. It was amazing how she'd apparently gained in the last mile or so, especially when he fell over and she landed on top of him. He'd lost one of his own boots in a mire. His hat was floating in a pool somewhere. Thorns had ripped his coat to tatters. He slipped and fell once again as the mud shifted under his feet. Granny rolled off and landed in a clump of sedge. If Brother Melchior could only see him now. The wow hawk swooped past and landed on the branch of a dead tree a few yards away. Oates hated the thing. It appeared demonic. It flew even though it surely couldn't see through the hood. Worse, whenever he thought about it, as now, the hooded head turned to fix him with an invisible stare. He took off his other useless shoe, its shiny leather all stained and cracked, and flung it, inexpertly. "Go away, you wicked creature!" The bird didn't stir. The shoe flew past it. Then, as he tried to get to his feet, he smelled burning leather. Two wisps of smoke were curling up from either side of the hood. Oates reached to his neck for the security of the turtle, and it wasn't there. It had cost him 5 obols in the citadel, and it was too late now to reflect that perhaps he shouldn't have hung it from a chain worth a tenth of an obol. It was probably lying in some pool, or buried in some muddy, squelching marsh. Now the leather burned away, and the yellow glow from the holes was so bright he could barely see the outline of the bird. It turned the dank landscape into lines and shadows, put a golden edge on every tuft of grass and stricken tree, and winked out so quickly that it left Oates's eyes full of purple explosions. When he'd recovered his breath and his balance, the bird was swooping away down the moor. He picked up Granny Weatherwax's unconscious body and ran after it. The track did lead downhill, at least. Mud and bracken slipped under his feet. Rivulets were running from every hole and gully. Half the time it seemed to him that he wasn't walking, merely controlling a slide, bouncing off rocks, slithering through puddles of mud and leaves. And then there was the castle, seen through a gap in the trees, lit by a flash of lightning. Oates staggered through a clump of thorn bushes, managed to keep upright down a slope of loose boulders, and collapsed on the road with Granny Weatherwax on top of him. She stirred.
"Holiday from reason. Kill them all. Can't be having with this," she murmured.
The wind blew a branch full of raindrops on her face, and she opened her eyes. For a moment they seemed to Oates to have red pupils. And then the icy blue gaze focused on him.
"Are we here, then?"
"Yes."
"What happened to your holy hat?"
"It got lost," said Oates abruptly. Granny peered closer.
"Your magic amulet's gone too," she said. "The one with the turtle and the little man on it."
"It's not a magic amulet, Mistress Weatherwax, please. A magic amulet is a symbol of primitive and mechanistic superstition, whereas the turtle of Om is, it's not, do you understand?"
"Oh, right. Thank you for explaining," said Granny. "Help me up, will you?"
Oates was having some difficulty with his temper. He'd carried the old bit, Biddy, for miles. He was frozen to the bone, and now they were here, she acted as if she'd somehow done him a favour. "What's the magic word?" he snarled.
"Oh, I don't think a holy man like you should be having with magic words," said Granny. "But the holy words are, do what I tell you or get smitten. They should do the trick."
He helped her to her feet, alive with badly digested rage, and supported her as she swayed. There was a scream from the castle, suddenly cut off.
"Not female," said Granny. "I reckon the girls have started. Let's give 'em a hand, shall we?"
Her arm shook as she raised it. The wowhawk fluttered down and settled on her wrist.
"Now, help get me to the gate."
"Don't mention it. Glad to be of service," Oates mumbled. He looked at the bird, whose hood swiveled to face him. "That's the other phoenix, isn't it?" he said.
"Yes," said Granny, watching the door. "A phoenix. You can't have just one of anything."
"But it looks like a little hawk."
"It was born among hawks, so it looks like a hawk. If it was hatched in a hen roost, it'd be a chicken. Stands to reason. And a hawk it'll remain until it needs to be a phoenix. They're shy birds. You could say a phoenix is what it may become."
"Too much eggshell."
"Yes, Mr. Oates. And when does the phoenix sometimes lay two eggs?" "When it needs to."
Hodges Arg was right. A phoenix is of the nature of birds. Bird first, myth second. The doors were hanging loose, their iron reinforcements twisted out of shape and their timbers smouldering, but some effort had been made to pull them shut. Over what remained of the arch, a bat carved in stone told visitors everything they needed to know about this place. On Granny's wrist, the hood of the hawk was crackling and smoking. As Oates watched, little flames erupted from the leather again.
"He knows what they did," said Granny. "He was hatched knowing. Phoenixes share their minds, and they don't tolerate evil."
The head turned to look at Oates with its white-hot stare, and instinctively he backed away and tried to cover his eyes.
"Use the door knocker," said Granny,
nodding to the big iron ring hanging loosely from one splintered door.
"What? You want me to knock on the door of a vampire's castle?
We're not going to sneak in, are we? Anyway, you Omnians are good at knocking on doors."
"Well, yes," said Oates, "but normally just for a shared prayer and to interest people in our pamphlets."
He let the knocker fall a few times, the boom echoing around the valley. "Not to have my throat ripped out."
"Think of this as a particularly difficult street," said Granny. "Try again. Maybe they're hiding behind the sofa, eh?"
"Huh."
"You're a good man, Mr. Oates," said Granny conversationally, as the echoes died away, "even without your holy book and holy amulet and holy hat."
I try to be," he ventured.
"Well, this is where you find out," said Granny. "To the fire we come at last, Mr. Oates. This is where we both find out."
Nanny raced up some stairs, a couple of vampires at her heels. The vampires were hampered because they hadn't got to grips with not being able to fly, but there was something else wrong with them as well.
"Tea!" one screamed. "I must have tea!"
Nanny pushed open the door to the battlements. They followed her and tripped over Igor's leg as he stepped out of the shadows. He raised two sharpened table legs.
"How'd you like your steaks, boys?" he shouted excitedly as he struck. "You should have said you liked my spiders."
Nanny leaned against the wall to get her breath back.
"Granny's somewhere here," she panted. "Don't ask me how, but those two were craving a cup of tea, and I reckon only Esme could mess up someone's head like that."
The sounds of the door knocker boomed around the courtyard below. At the same time, the door at the other end of the battlements opened. Half a dozen vampires advanced.
"They're acting very dumb, aren't they?"
said Nanny. "Give me a couple more steaks."
"Run out of steaks, Nanny."
"OK, then pass me a bottle of holy water. Hurry up."
"None left, Nanny."
"We got nothing."
"Got an orange, Nanny."
"What for?"
"Run out of lemons."
"What good will an orange do if I hit a vampire in the mouth with it?" said Nanny, eyeing the approaching creatures. Igor scratched his head.
"Well, I suppose they won't catch cold so easily."
The knocking reverberated around the castle again. Several vampires were creeping across the courtyard. Nanny caught a flicker of light around the edge of the door. Instinct took over. As the vampires began to run, she grabbed Igor and pulled him down. The arch exploded, every stone and plank drifting away on an expanding bubble of eyeball-searing flame. It lifted the vampires off their feet, and they screamed as the fire carried them up. When the brightness had faded a little, Nanny peered carefully into the courtyard. A bird, house-sized, with wings of flame wider than the castle, reared in the broken doorway. Mightily Oates pushed himself up onto his hands and knees. Hot flames roared around him, thundering like fiercely burning gas. His skin should have been blackening already, but against all reason, the fire felt no more deadly than a hot desert wind. The air smelled of camphor and spices. He looked up. The flames wrapped Granny Weatherwax, but they looked oddly transparent, not entirely real. Here and there, little gold and green sparks glittered on her dress, and all the time the fire whipped and tore around her. She looked down at him.
"You're in the wings of a phoenix now, Mr. Oates," she shouted above the noise, "and you ain't burned."
The bird, flapping its wings on her wrist, was incandescent.
"How can—" "You're the scholar. But male birds are always ones for the big display, aren't they?"
"Males? This is a male phoenix?"
"Yes."
It leapt. What flew, as far as Oates could see, was a great bird shape of pale flame, with the little form of the real bird inside it, like the head of a comet. He added to himself, "If that is indeed the real bird." It swooped up into the tower. A yell, cut off quickly, indicated that a vampire hadn't been fast enough. "It doesn't burn itself," Oates said weakly.
"Shouldn't think so," said Granny, stepping over the wreckage. "Wouldn't be much point."
"Then it must be magical fire."
"They say that whether it burns you or not is up to you," said Granny. "I used to watch them as a kid. My granny told me about them. Some cold nights you see them dancing in the sky over the hub, burning green and gold."
"Oh, you mean the Aurora Coriolis," said Oates, trying to make his voice sound matter-of-fact. "But actually that's caused by, magic particles hitting the—"
"Dunno what it's caused by," said Granny sharply, "but what it is the phoenix dancing."
She reached out. "I ought to hold your arm." "In case I fall over," said Oates, still watching the burning bird.
"That's right."
As he took her weight, the phoenix above them flung back its head and screamed at the sky.
"And to think, I thought it was an allegorical creature," said the priest.
"Well, even allegories have to live," said Granny Weatherwax.
Vampires are not naturally cooperative creatures. It's not in their nature. Every other vampire is a rival for the next meal. In fact, the ideal situation for a vampire is a world in which every other vampire has been killed off, and no one seriously believes in vampires anymore. They are by nature as cooperative as sharks. Vampires are just the same, the only real difference being that they can't spell properly. The remnant of the clan scurried through the keep and headed for a door that for some reason had been left ajar. The bucket, containing a cocktail of waters blessed by a knight of Offla, a high priest of Io, and a man so generically holy that he hadn't cut his hair or washed for 70 years, landed on the first two to run through. They did not include the Count and his family, who had moved as one into a side tower. There's no point in having underlings if you don't let them be the first to go through suspicious doors.
"How could you have been so—"
Lacrimosa began, and to her shock got a slap across the face from her father.
"All we need to do is remain calm," said the Count. "There's no need to panic."
"You struck me."
"And most satisfying it was, too," said the Count. "Careful thought is what will save us. That is why we will survive."
"It's not working," said Lacrimosa. "I'm a vampire. I'm supposed to crave blood. And all I can think about is a cup of tea with 3 sugars in it,
whatever the hell that is. That old woman's doing something to us, can't you see?"
"'Not possible,' said the Count. "'Oh, she's sharp for a human, but I don't reckon there's any way she could get into your head or mine.'
"'You're even talking like her,' shouted Lacrimosa.
"'Be resolute, my dear,' said the Count. "'Remember, that which does not kill us can only make us stronger.'
"'And that which does kill us leaves us dead,' snarled Lacrimosa. "'You saw what happened to the others. You got your fingers burned.'
"'A moment's lapse of concentration,' said the Count. "'That old witch is not a threat. She's a vampire, subservient to us. She'll be seeing the world differently.'
"'Are you mad? Something killed Cryptopher.'
"'He let himself be frightened.'
The rest of the family looked at the Count. Vlad and Lacrimosa exchanged a glance.
"'I am supremely confident,' said the Count.
His smile looked like a death mask, waxen and disturbingly tranquil.
"'My mind is like a rock. My nerve is firm. A vampire with his wits about him, or her, of course, can never be defeated. Didn't I teach you this? What's this one?'
His hand flew from his pocket, holding a square of white cardboard.
"'Oh, Father, this is really no time for—'
Lacrimosa froze, then jerked her arm in front of her face.
"'Put it away! Put it away! It's the Agatian Chlong of destiny!'
"'Exactly! Which is merely three straight lines and two curved lines, pleasantly arranged, which—'
"'I'd never have known about it if you hadn't told me, you old fool!'
screamed the girl, backing away. The Count turned to his son. "'And do you—' he began. Vlad sprang back, putting his hand over his eyes.
"'It hurts!' he shouted.
"'Dear me! The two of you haven't been practicing!'
the Count began, and turned the card around so that he could look at it. He screwed up his eyes and turned his face away.
"'What have you done to us?' Lacrimosa screamed. "'You've taught us how to see hundreds of the damned holy things. They're everywhere!' Every religion has a different one. You taught us that, you stupid bastard. Lines and crosses and circles. Oh, my!
She caught sight of the stone wall behind her astonished brother and shuddered.
Everywhere I look, I see something holy. You've taught us to see patterns.
She snarled at her father, teeth exposed.
It'll be dawn soon, said the Countess nervously. Will it hurt?
It won't. "'Of course it won't,' shouted Count Magpier, as the others glanced up at the pale light coming through the high window. "'It's a learned psychochromatic reaction, a superstition. It's all in the mind.'
"'What else is in our minds, father?'
said Vlad coldly. The Count was circling, trying to keep an eye on Lacrimosa. The girl was flexing her fingers and snarling.
"'I said, nothing's in our minds that we didn't put there.'
The Count roared.
I saw that old witch's mind. It's weak. She relies on trickery. She couldn't possibly find a way in. I wonder if there are other agendas here.
He bared his teeth at Lacrimosa. The Countess fanned herself desperately.
Well, I think we're all getting a little bit overexcited, she said. I think we should all settle down and have a nice cup of tea. A cup of...
We're vampires, Lacrimosa shouted. "'Then let's act like them!' screamed the Count.
Agnes opened her eyes, kicked up, and the man with the hammer and stake lost all interest in vampires and in consciousness as well.
"'Ugh!'
Agnes removed from her mouth what was this time a fig.
"'Can you get it into your stupid heads that I'm not a vampire? And this isn't a lemon, it's a fig. And I'd watch that bloke with a stake. He's altogether too keen on it. I reckon there's some psychology there.'
"'I wouldn't have let him use it,' said Piotr, "'but you did act very odd, and then you just collapsed, "'so we thought we'd better see what woke up.'
"'He stood up. "'The citizens of Escrow stood watching among the trees, "'their faces gaunt in the flickering torchlight.
"'It's all right. She's still not one,' he said.
"'There was some general relaxation.
"'You really have changed,' said Perdita.
"'You're not affected?' said Agnes. "'She felt as if she was on the end of a string "'with someone jerking the other end.'
"'No, I'm the bit of you that watches, remember?'
"'What?' said Piotr.
"'I really, really hope this wears off,' said Agnes. "'I keep tripping over my own feet. "'I'm walking wrong. My whole body feels wrong.'
"'Can we go under the castle?' said Piotr.
"'She's already there,' said Agnes. "'I don't know how, but—'
"'She stopped and looked at the worried faces, "'and for a moment she found herself thinking in the way Granny Weatherwax thought.
"'Yes,'
she said more slowly. "'I reckon—'
I mean, I think we ought to get there right away. People have to kill their own vampires.
Nanny hurried down the steps again.
I told you, she said. That's Esme Weatherwax down there, that is. I told you. I knew she was just biding her time. I'd like to see the bloodsucker who could put one over on her.
I wouldn't, said Igor fervently.
Nanny stepped over a vampire who hadn't noticed in the shadows a cunning combination of a tripwire, a heavy weight, and a stake, and opened a door into the courtyard.
Cooey! Esme!
Granny Weatherwax pushed Oates away and stepped forward.
Is the baby all right?
She said. Magrat and young Esme are locked up in the crypt. It's a very strong door, said Nanny.
And Scraps is guarding them, said Igor. He's a wonderful guard dog.
Granny raised her eyebrows and looked Igor up and down.
I don't think I know these gentlemen, she said.
Oh, this is Igor, said Nanny, a man of many parts.
So it seems, said Granny.
Nanny glared at Mightily Oates.
What did you bring him for? She said.
Couldn't seem to shake him off, said Granny.
I always try hiding behind the sofa myself, said Nanny.
Oates looked away. There was a scream from somewhere on the battlements. The phoenix had spotted another vampire.
All over now, bar sweeping up the dust, then, said Nanny. They didn't seem very smart.
The Count's still here, said Granny flatly.
Oh, I thought we'd just set fire to the place and go home, said Nanny. It's not as though he'll be coming back to Lunkery in a hurry.
There's a crowd coming, said Igor.
I can't hear anything, said Nanny.
I've got very good ears, said Igor.
Ah, well, of course, some of us don't get to choose, said Nanny.
There was a clattering of footsteps across the bridge, and people were suddenly swarming over the rubble.
Isn't that Agnes? Said Nanny.
Normally, there'd be no mistaking the figure advancing across the courtyard, but there was something about the walk, the way every foot thudded down as though the boots were not on speaking terms with the earth. And the arms, too, swung in a way.
I can't be having with this, Agnes shouted, marching up to Granny. I can't think straight. It's you, isn't it?
Granny reached out and touched the wounds on her neck.
Oh, I see, she said. One of them bit you, yes?
Yes, and somehow you spoke to me.
Not me. That was something in your blood talking, I reckon, said Granny. Who are all these people? Why's that man trying to set fire to the wall? Doesn't he know stone don't burn?
Oh, that's Claude. He's a bit single-minded. Just let me know if he picks up a stake, will you? Look, they're from Escrow. It's a town not far away. The Magpies treated them like, well, pets. Farm animals, just like they were trying to do back home.
We ain't leaving until we've dealt with the Count, said Granny. Otherwise he'll be sneaking back.
Excuse me, said Oates, who seemed to have been thinking about something. Excuse me, but did someone, mention that the Queen was locked up in the crypt?
Safe as houses, said Nanny. Huge, thick door, and you can bar it from the inside.
How safe are houses from, vampires? Said Oates. Granny's head turned sharply.
What do you mean?
Oates took a step backwards.
Ah, I know what he means, said Nanny. It's all right, we're not daft. She won't open up until she knows it's us.
I meant, how does the door stop vampires?
Stop them? It's a door.
So they can't turn themselves into some sort of mist, then? Said Oates, frying in the joint radiation of their stares. Only I thought that vampires could, you see. I thought everyone knew that who knows anything about vampires.
Granny turned on Igor.
Do you know anything about this?
Igor's mouth opened and shut a few times.
The old Count never did anything like that, he said.
Yes, said Nanny, but he played fair.
There was a rising howl from the depths of the castle, cut off suddenly.
That was Scraps, said Igor, breaking into a run.
Scraps?
Said Agnes, wrinkling her brow. Nanny grabbed her arm and dragged her after Igor. Granny swayed a little. Her eyes had an unfocused look. Oates glanced at her, made up his mind, staggered rather theatrically, and sprawled in the dust. Granny blinked, shook her head, and glared down at him.
Ah, all too much for you, eh? She said hoarsely.
Trembling fingers reached down for Oates. He took them, taking care not to pull, and stood up.
If you could just, give me a hand, he said, as her grateful weight hit his shoulder.
Right, said Granny. Now let's find the kitchens.
Huh? What do we want with the kitchens?
After a night like this, we could all do with a cup of tea, said Granny.
Magrat leaned against the door as a second thump rattled the bolts. Beside her, Scraps started to growl. Perhaps it was something to do with his extensive surgery, but Scraps growled in half a dozen different pitches all at once. Then there was silence, which was even more terrifying than the thumping. A faint noise made her look down. A green smoke was pouring out through the keyhole. It was thick and had an oily quality. She darted across the room and snatched up a jar that had contained lemons so sportingly provided by the mysterious old count that Igor thought so highly of. She wrenched off the lid and held it under the keyhole. When the smoke had filled it up, she dropped a few cloves of garlic in and slammed the lid back on. The jar rocked urgently on the floor. Then Magrat glanced at the lid of the well. When she lifted it up, she heard rushing water a long way below. Well, that was likely, wasn't it? There must be lots of underground rivers in the mountains. She held the jar over the centre of the hole and let it go. Then she slammed the lid back down. Young Esme gurgled in the corner. Magrat hurried over to her and shook a rattle. "Look at the pretty bunny rabbit," she said, and darted back again. There was whispering on the other side of the door. Then Nanny Ogg's voice said, "It's all right, dear, we've got 'em. You can open the door now, Lorks." Magrat rolled her eyes. "Is that really you, Nanny?" "That's right, dear." "Thank goodness. Just tell me the joke about the old woman, the priest, and the rhinoceros, then I'll let you in." There was a pause and some more whispering. "I don't think we've got time for that, dear," said the voice. "Ah, nice try," said Magrat. "I've dropped one of you in the river. Who was it?" After some silence, the voice of the count said, "We thought the countess could persuade you to listen to reason." "Not in a jar, she can't," said Magrat, "and I've got more jars if you want to try it again." "We had hoped that you would be sensible about this," said the count. "However..." The door slammed back, pulling the bolts out of the wall. Magrat grabbed the baby and stepped backwards, her other hand raised. "You come near me and I'll stab you with this," she shouted. "It's a teddy bear," said the count. "I'm afraid it wouldn't work even if you sharpened it." The door was so hard that the wood was like stone with a grain. Someone had once thought hard about the maximum amount of force a really determined mob would be able to apply, and had then over-designed. It hung open.
"But we heard her put the bars across," wailed Nanny.
A variously coloured lump was sprawled in front of the door. Igor knelt down and picked up a limp paw.
"They've killed Scraps, the bastards."
"They've got Magrat and the baby," snapped Nanny.
"He was my only friend."
Nanny's arm shot out, and despite his bulk, Igor was lifted up by his collar.
"You're going to have one very serious enemy really soon, my lad, unless you help us out right now, or for heaven's sake."
With her spare hand, she reached into her knicker leg and produced a large crumpled handkerchief.
"Have a good blow, will you?"
There was a noise like a foghorn being trodden on.
"Now, where would they take them? This place is swarming with righteous peasants," said Nanny when he'd finished.
"He was always ready with his waggy tails and his cold nose,"
Igor sobbed.
"Where, Igor?"
Igor pointed with his finger, or at least one that he currently owned, to the far door.
"That goes to the vaults," he said, "and they can get out through the iron gate down in the valley. You'll never catch them."
"But it's still bolted," said Agnes.
"Then they're still in the castle, which is stupid."
He was interrupted by several huge organ chords which made the floor rumble.
"Any of the escrow folk, big musicians?" said Nanny, lowering Igor.
"How do I know?" said Agnes, as another couple of descending chords brought dust down from the ceiling. "They wanted to hammer a stake in me and boil me head. That is not the time to ask them to give a little whistle." The organ piped its summons once more.
"Why'd they stay?" said Nanny. "They could be dug in deep somewhere by now."
"Oh, Granny wouldn't run," said Agnes.
"No, Granny Weatherwax likes a showdown," said Nanny, grinning artfully. "And they're thinking like her. Somehow she's making them think like her."
"She thinks like her too," said Agnes.
"Let's hope she's had more practice then," said Nanny. "Come on."
Lacrimosa pulled an organ stop marked "Ghastly Face at Window" and was rewarded with a chord, a crash of thunder, and a slightly mechanical scream.
"Thank goodness we don't take after your side of the family, Father, that's all I can say," she said, "although I suppose it could be fun if we could arrange some sort of mechanical linkage to the torture chamber. That certainly wasn't a very realistic scream."
"This is ridiculous," said Vlad. "We've got the child, we've got the woman. Why don't we just leave? There are plenty of other castles."
That would be running away, said the Count.
And surviving, said Vlad, rubbing his head.
We don't run, said the Count. And, no, step back, please.
This was to the mob, which was hovering uncertainly just inside the doors. Mobs become uncertain very quickly, in view of the absence of a central brain, and in this case the hesitation was caused by the sight of Magrat and the baby. Vlad had a bruise on his forehead. A push-and-go wooden duck on wheels can cause quite a lot of damage if wielded with enough force.
Well done, said the Count, cradling baby Esme on one arm.
Magrat writhed to escape the grip of his other hand, but it clamped her wrist like steel.
You see? Absolute obedience. It's just as in chess. If you take the queen, you've as good as won. It doesn't matter if a few pawns are lost.
That's a very nasty way to talk about mother, said Vlad.
I'm very attached to your mother, said the Count, and she'll find a way to return in the fullness of time. A voyage will be good for her health. Some fishermen will find the jar, and next thing you know she'll be back with us, fat and healthy. Ah, the inestimable Mrs. Ogg.
Don't you go smarming me, snapped Nanny, pushing her way through the bewildered crowd. I'm fed up with you smarming at me, smarmily, as if you were Mr. Smarm. Now you just free the both of them, or...
Ah, so quickly we get to all, sighed the Count. But I will say, you will all leave the castle, and then we shall see. Perhaps we shall let the Queen go, but the little princess, isn't she charming? She can remain as our guest. She'll brighten the place up.
"'She's coming back to Lancre with us, you bastard!' screamed Magrat.
She twisted in the Count's grip and tried to slap him, but Agnes saw her face whiten as his hand tightened on her wrist.
"'That's very bad language for a queen,' said the Count, "'and I am still very strong, even for a vampire. "'But you're right. "'We shall all go back to Lancre, one big happy family, living in the castle. "'I must say this place is losing its attractions.' Oh, don't blame yourself, Mrs. Ogg. I'm sure others will do that for you.
He stopped. A sound that had been on the edge of hearing was getting louder. It had a rhythmic, almost tinny sound. The crowd parted. Granny Weatherwax walked forward, slowly stirring.
No milk in this place, she said. Not to be wondered at, really. I sliced a bit of lemon, but it's not the same, I always think.
She laid the spoon in the saucer with a clink that echoed around the hall and gave the Count a smile.
Am I too late? She said.
The bolts rattled back one by one.
Gone too far, Igor muttered. The old master wouldn't.
The door creaked back on lovingly rusted hinges. Cool, dry air puffed out of the darkness. Igor fumbled with some matches and lit a torch.
It's all very well wanting a nice long rest, but this is a disgrace.
He ran along the dark corridors, half rough masonry, half sheer naked rock, and reached another chamber that was completely empty apart from a large stone sarcophagus in the centre, on the side of which was carved Magpeer. He stuffed the torch into a bracket, removed his coat, and after considerable pushing, heaved the stone lid aside.
Sorry about this, master,
he grunted as it thudded to the ground. Inside the coffin, grey dust twinkled in the torchlight.
Coming up here... "'Messing everything up?'
Igor picked up his coat and took a thick wad of material out of his pocket. He unrolled it on the edge of the stone. Now the light glinted off an array of scalpels, scissors and needles.
"'Threatening little babies now? You never done that. "'Only adventurous females over the age of 17 and looking good in a nighty, you always said.'
He selected a scalpel and, with some care, nicked the little finger of his left hand. A drop of blood appeared, swelled, and dropped onto the dust where it smoked.
"'That one's for scraps,' said Igor with grim satisfaction.
By the time he'd reached the door, white mist was already pouring over the edge of the coffin.
"'I'm an old lady,' said Granny Weatherwax, looking around sternly. "'I'd like to sit down, thank you very much.'
A bench was rushed forward. Granny sat and eyed the Count.
"'What were you saying?' she said. "'Ah!' Esmeralda, said the Count, at last you come to join us. The call of the blood is too strong to be disobeyed, yes? I hope so, said Granny. We're all going to walk out of here, Miss Weatherwax. You're not leaving here, said Granny.
She stirred the tea again. The eyes of all three vampires swiveled to follow the spoon.
You have no choice but to obey me. You know that, said the Count. Oh, there's always a choice, said Granny.
Vlad and Lacrimosa leaned down on either side of their father. There was some hurried whispering. The Count looked up.
No,
"You couldn't have resisted it," he said. "Not even you."
"I won't say it didn't cost me," said Granny. She stirred the tea again. There was more whispering.
"We do have the Queen and the baby," said the Count. "I believe you think highly of them."
Granny raised the cup halfway to her lips.
"Kill 'em," she said. "It won't benefit you."
"Esme," snapped Nanny Ogg and Magrat together.
Granny put the cup back in the saucer. Agnes thought she saw Vlad sigh. She could feel the pull herself.
"I know what she did," whispered Perdita.
"So do I," thought Agnes.
"He's bluffing," Granny said. "Oh, you'd like a vampire queen one day, would you?" said Lacrimosa. "Had one once, in Lancre," said Granny conversationally. "Poor woman got bitten by one of you people. Got by on blue steak and such. Never laid a tooth on anyone, the way I heard it. Griminier the Impaler, she was."
"The Impaler?"
"Oh, I just said she wasn't a bloodsucker. I didn't say she was a nice person," said Granny. "She didn't mind shedding blood, but she drew the line at drinking it. You don't have to, neither."
"You know nothing about true vampires."
"I know more than you think, and I know about Githa Ogg," said Granny.
Nanny Ogg blinked. Granny Weatherwax raised the teacup again, and then lowered it.
"She likes a drink. She'll tell you it has to be best brandy."
Nanny nodded affirmation.
"And that's certainly what she desires. But really, she'll settle for beer just like everyone else."
Nanny Ogg shrugged as Granny went on.
"But you wouldn't settle for black puddings, would you? Because what you really drink is power over people. I know you like I know myself, and one of the things I know is that you ain't going to hurt a hair of that child's head. Leastways," and here Granny absent-mindedly stirred the tea again, "if she had any yet, you wouldn't. You can't, see?"
She picked up the cup and carefully scraped it on the edge of the saucer. Agnes saw Lacrimosa's lips part hungrily.
"So all I'm really here for, d'ye see, is to see whether you get justice or mercy," said Granny. "It's just a matter of choosing."
"You really think we wouldn't harm meat?" said Lacrimosa, striding forward. "Watch!"
She brought her hand down hard towards the baby and then jerked back as if she'd been stung.
"Can't do it," said Granny.
"I nearly broke my arm."
"Shame," said Granny calmly. "You've put something magical in the child, haven't you?" said the Count. "Can't imagine who'd think I'd do such a thing," said Granny, while behind her Nanny Ogg looked down at her boots. "So here's my offer, you see. You hand back Magrat and the baby, and we'll chop your heads off." "And that's what you call justice, is it?" said the Count. "No, that's what I call mercy," said Granny.
She put the cup back in the saucer.
"For goodness sake, woman, are you going to drink that damn tea or not?" roared the Count.
Granny sipped it and made a face.
"Why, what have I been thinking of? I've been so busy talking it's got cold," she said, and daintily tipped the contents of the cup onto the floor.
Lacrimosa groaned.
"It'll probably wear off soon," Granny went on in the same easy voice. "But until it does, you see, you'll not harm a child. You'll not harm Magrat. You hate the thought of drinking blood, and you won't run because you'll never run from a challenge."
"What will wear off?" said Vlad.
"Oh, they're strong, your walls of thought," said Granny dreamily. "I couldn't get through them."
The Count smiled. Granny smiled too.
"So, I didn't," she added.